I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Now it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week, our writer Jimmy Israel, with us from Cleveland. With us from Pittsburgh, Glennie McAllister. He's host of the McAllister Minute on American Urban Radio Network. In Chicago, Arsalan Iftikhar. He's senior editor of the Islamic Monthly and founder of themuslimguide.com. And we caught up with him in St. Louis today from National Review Magazine and the Texas Public Policy Foundation Chief Counsel Mario Loyola. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, all my favorite people in the barbershop, per usual. What's up? And welcome to the barbershop. How we doing?
What's going on, Jimmy?
I'm not trying to be mean. He says that to everybody.
Right. I know, right?
Just saying. Just thought I'd clear
up. Mr. McAllister, you're back.
What's going on, child of God? How are you?
Man, as always, you look like you could use a cupcake. Word to Tom Parada. Look that up. So, you know what? Let's get a quick hit and talk about the World Series. A-Train, you know, your St. Louis Cardinals beat the Boston Red Sox 4-2 last night in the World Series. Are you fired up today?
I am. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, I grew up born and raised in Chicago, but I did spend 7 years of my life for both college and law school in St. Louis, stand up Wash U. Mm-hmm. And, you know, after a bum-fuzzling game one, which was riddled with errors, the St. Louis Cardinals were able to steal a game away from the Red Sox in game two. And now the World Series goes back to St. Louis for three games. And if the Cardinals can hold serve and win every game at home, they'll win the World Series, and it'll be Cristal Maybach diamonds on their timepiece.
Hey, what's this baseball you speak of? No, I'm just kidding. My people are from St. Louis, so stand up, St. Louis. Super Mario, now we know you only pay attention to the Packers, but you're in St. Louis this week. Is Cardinals fever, is it rubbing off on you, bro?
Yeah, it is. And also, I should say that because I grew up in a Cuban and Puerto Rican family, I see the World Series in its larger historical and geopolitical context, which is Boston Red Sox are basically this terrifying alliance of Venezuelans and Dominicans bent on robbing my people of their heritage as keepers of the flame of American baseball.
Who are
and
your
I think
people?
That they need to be stopped. Oh, the Cubans and Puerto Ricans.
They're the keepers. Okay, I'm sorry, I was confused. Okay, because you have a lot of things, ethnicities going on there, and I just want to always kind of clarify which one we're claiming today. Okay.
So I think Boston needs to be stopped.
Got it. Okay. Too bad Neil Minkoff isn't here to even this conversation out. Minkoff from Boston to kind of give his side of the thing. Okay, Lenny, do you have a dog in this fight? Who you like?
My dog lost game four in the NLDS to these Cardinals when Michael Wacha basically did to the Pirates what he did to the Red Sox last night. I'm still stinging about that, but at least the Pirates got to the playoffs for the first time in 20 years, so I'm not complaining.
Okay. Well, good. All Jimmy, right. Jimmy, what about you? You have a dog in this fight?
Again, with this baseball you speak of, I live in Cleveland, and you know we're looking to put a dog in the fight. We're looking at a dog for next year's team. I'm just kidding, Cleveland. I love you. So anyway, you know, from baseball to the spy game, can we make that transition?
Yes, we can.
And yes, we did. Leaders around the world are telling President Obama to quit listening on their phone calls. What's up with that, Michelle?
Well, there's a secret memo that allegedly reveals that the National Security Agency was monitoring the calls of some 30 world leaders. One of them may have been German Chancellor Angela Merkel, and she is not happy about this, and she apparently called President Obama this week to express her displeasure. The White House has offered an interesting response. The administration says it is not now monitoring Chancellor Merkel.
Oh, that was an awkward call, Michelle. I know it was. Thank you for that. You know, I think Ms. Merkel was probably just keeping up on her soccer team because she's an avid rabid fan, but you know, comedian Jon Stewart had some fun with this topic last night. Here he is talking about Secretary of State John Kerry trying to explain everything to U.S. allies. Drop that.
Kerry said to the French, quote, "Nations be spying, yo." This ambassador knows what I'm talking about.
Actually, that's not really what he said. This is really what he said.
As President Obama said very clearly in a recent speech that he gave at the United Nations General Assembly just a few weeks ago, he said, "We in the United States are currently reviewing the way that we gather intelligence."
By reviewing the way we gather intelligence, we mean from now on, we're going to try and do it secretly.
Right. That's exactly right. You know, all of this seems so obvious. Like, you know, world leaders obviously should expect this. And to me, it's as if these countries are trying to say, how dare you spy on us because we're spying on you, but we didn't get caught. Ha ha. But Arsalan Iftikhar, you know, what do you make of all this?
Well, you know, when I first heard the reports that the NSA was spying on German Chancellor Angela Merkel, my first thought was, could we have picked a more boring world leader to spy on? You know, I think that spying on a bushel of asparagus, which I endearingly refer to as asparagi, would probably yield more results. But what's interesting to me is the fact that, you know, here are many world leaders that we consider allies. I mean, you know, in our public diplomacy with these countries, how can we refer to countries as allies when we're secretly taping and spying on their elected leaders? And, you know, it reminds me of the famous quote attributed to Mae West, you know, with friends like these, who needs enemies?
I mean, yeah, you know what? Merkel is, she's kind of spooky, man. Physicist and with that spooky thing she does with her hand, the triangle of power. I don't know. I mean, maybe we need to keep an eye on her. Mario, you weigh in on this, man.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything incompatible between having allies around the world and spying on them. It's always gone on. It's going to keep going on. And I can understand the Brazilian government being upset by this, but I excuse me if I find it, shall we say, risible for the French and Germans to get upset. I mean, they have the world's, you know, what is it, third and fourth best spying operations with far fewer safeguards than NSA surveillance has. And by the way, I mean, if they're such great spies, then why can't they keep their own cell phones from being hacked so easily? I mean, so I think I can understand their embarrassment, but I have to wonder if a part of the phone call from the French President Hollande and German Chancellor Merkel wasn't asking President Obama to promise them that there aren't going to be any more Edward Snowdens, because, I mean, to a certain extent, it just puts these governments in a terribly embarrassing position when everyone knows that they just spy on each other and get along.
I want to just clarify that, because one of the things I think that all of you are saying is that actually this is a two-way street. In fact, there have been reports for years that this is a two-way street, that these governments also spy on American diplomats, American business people, and that this is known to both governments. Mario, do you mind if I ask you this question? Why? Why do they? Why do allies continue to do this?
Because they can, and because, you know, they to some extent, they have to. I mean, we have in this country, in our NSA surveillance programs, we've tried very hard. And I remember when I was on Senate staff in 2008, I watched this up close. You know, we try very hard to reconcile civil liberty safeguards to the need to protect the country. And the simple fact of the matter is that foreigners do not have Fourth Amendment protections under our laws. I mean, I think that it's, you know, as technology advances and governments are able to collect much more information than people are comfortable with, we're going to need new safeguards on the domestic front, and we also may need new rules of the road and new understandings with other governments. But the spying is going to continue. We need the information. We need to prevent terrorists from attacking our people. And so to some extent, some minimal level, the surveillance is going to continue.
Lenny, you have any thoughts on this?
Yes. It's not a two-way street. It's not equal for two main reasons. Number one, none of these other world leaders are Nobel Peace Prize holders. President Obama is. And furthermore, when President Obama came into office in the election of November 2008, the promise that came with him was that he would restore the global esteem of the United States of America. This is the type of sloppy story that you would expect in the second term of George W. Bush, not the second term of Barack Obama. And therefore, it looks horrible globally, which is why you're seeing the optics from a news standpoint that you're seeing. And unfortunately, this is another disappointing story on the Obama administration.
I'm just puzzled by the relevance of the Nobel Peace Prize. It's not like he went over there and asked for it, number one. And number two, in his acceptance speech, he made it very clear that he is not a pacifist and was not going to meet these expectations of the world community may or may not have had that he would be that. And he said very clearly in his acceptance speech, which ruffled some feathers at the time, that he placed U.S. interests in national security first and foremost.
But
so
Michelle,
I don't understand the relevance of that.
Well, the relevance is, Michelle, the image that he came into office with was changing the tone of what we had in Washington under Bush Cheney. It was changing the tone that the Iraqis had towards us when they were throwing shoes at George Bush. It was changing the tone of us being warmongers and being a nation that you can't really trust. And over the course of the last five or so years, you have this inconsistent record there where some of our allies trust us. We're trying to reach out to folks such as the Iranians back in 2009. Didn't quite work out as well. Inconsistent foreign policy with Syria and some of the contradictions in Libya. So this is part of an inconsistent record that does not jibe with somebody that was awarded a Nobel Peace Prize. He didn't give it back.
I want to
this
mention
is something that he's worn as his
record. I should have mentioned that Lenny's a Republican. Sorry, forgot to mention that.
Yeah.
You're listening to our weekly Barbershop Roundtable. We're joined by Republican strategist strategist and talk show host Lenny McAllister. That's who was speaking just now. Also writer Jimmy Israel, commentator Arsalan Iftikhar, and columnist and chief counsel for the Texas Public Policy Foundation, Mario Loyola. Back to you, Jimmy. Different subject.
Thanks, Michelle. Thank you. Thank you, Michelle. So, you know what? Check this out. A black teenager was detained by police for making an expensive purchase at Barney's New York. He saved up, bought a designer belt for $350. Holy mackerel. And you know what? Then he left the store. That's when the cops stepped in. Right, Michelle?
Well, the young man's name is Trayvon Christian. He's a 19-year-old engineering student at New York City College of Technology. What happened was that two undercover detectives stopped him after he left Barney's. They checked his ID. They questioned him. They brought him in handcuffs to the station while they checked his information. And this is what Christian had to say about the incident.
Why me? I guess because I'm a young black man. And, you know, people, they do credit card scams. So they probably thought that I was one of them.
Well, anyway, it's interesting because Barney's has issued a number of statements about this. They say that at first they say that no employee of theirs was involved in sending the police in Mr. Christian's direction. But then they subsequently have posted on their Facebook page today saying that they regret the incident, that they're very sorry. This happened in April, but Christian is now, I was going to use a New Yorkism, which is say, not for nothing, Christian is now suing Barney's and the NYPD, saying he was racially profiled. So, Jimmy?
Yeah, thank you for that, Michelle. You know, and I'm not sure if he has the case, and I'm going to tell you why. Because I'm not sure if he's conspicuous by race so much as he is by age. I mean, if I have a teenager walking up to my counter, you know, dropping down, you know, close to $400 on a belt, on a consumable that can easily be resold in the street, you know, I'm going to look at him a little askance. I'm sorry, bro. I'm going to have to cut Barney some slack.
He had a receipt. He showed the police his receipt.
I mean, the receipt wasn't the problem. The fact that he may have been using counterfeit credit cards.
Based on what? If he bought a PlayStation?
Yeah.
No, but if he bought a PlayStation isn't $350. A PlayStation is a different kind of consumable. That isn't anything you can sell. You can sell on the subway for, you know, half price and still make that money back. So I'm going to have to give Barney's the benefit of the doubt.
Well, Arsalan's a civil rights lawyer. Let's hear from him on
Yeah.
This.
All right. You know, I'm going to have to take the opposite side of the spectrum here, Jimmy, and push back by saying that, you know, if a young teenage, you know, Upper West Side, you know, trust fund baby walked into Barney's to buy a $300 belt, I don't think that anybody would have blinked twice. I think that this was a case of racial profiling, and it actually reminds me of the concept of mystery shopping or mystery consumers, which is a tool that's been used by watchdog organizations for decades. Basically, who send in minorities into apartments to rent them or stores to see if they're treated the same way as other consumers are treated. You know, African American people will go into an apartment building to try to rent an apartment that the landlord will say is already taken, and then a white couple will come in the same day and they will rent to them. And, you know, even after 9/11, you know, Arab, Muslim, and South Asian people, you know, were denied access to apartments and shopping because of this also. And mystery shopping is something that's been going on. And I think this is a perfect example of why that is. And I think it's just another indicative proof that we do not live in a post-racial America.
Take his argument seriously, though, for a minute. I mean, his argument is that it's just out of the norm for a kid that young to be able to buy something that expensive. His argument is it's his age, not his race.
Right.
Do you credit that? And you say no.
No, not. And that was the first thing that I said was that if a trust fund teenager from the Upper West Side walked in, a white kid walked in and plopped down $300 for a Barney's belt, I think that nobody would have blinked twice.
Hmm. Well, Mario, what do you think?
Not necessarily. Yeah, I was going to say. I mean, I just want to share a personal perspective on this because I used to work in a law firm in Midtown, and I've shopped at that Barney's before. And, you know, when I went there and got my blew way too much money on a Hickey Freeman coat, I was wearing an Italian suit and nice shoes, and I was coming from work, and I looked like I owned it. But I remember also that, you know, I lived on the Lower East Side during those years, and I looked like I belonged there on the weekend, ripped up jeans and what have you. And I remember that one time, by some terrible misfortune, which I've probably forgotten, I found myself in Midtown on the weekend, which was like the last place I would ever want to be on the weekend. And I walked into that Barney's and wearing ripped up jeans and flannels, and I felt very much like I was the thing that did not belong there.
But were you stopped by the police? Did the police walk you out? Did they put you in handcuffs?
No, because of your jeans? I'm not justifying what happened here, which is obviously a tragic case, and it makes me very sad to think about it. But I remember walking to that Barney's on the weekend, and my first thought was, dude, get back on the 6 train and go back downtown where you belong, because you do not belong here.
Okay, but I ask, were you handcuffed? Were you followed out by New York City undercover? Okay.
No. And I don't think that, obviously, this shouldn't have happened. And it's a terrible thing that it happened. And he may well prevail in a lawsuit. But, I mean, getting back to Jimmy's point, I don't think that it had to do with race. I mean, I think that age and general aspect could have been enough. I mean, So you don't know.
Lenny, what do you think?
It's absolutely about race. This is about, I mean, we're in the era of Trayvon Martin. We're in the era of Barack Obama. We're in the era where racial animus is cool once again, and you can do it under the guise of saying, well, I voted for a black president, I'm not racist. And this is just indicative of where we're going as a nation, and I think that anybody that overlooks that is running a very dangerous risk, because at this point in time, we're already risking a generation of African-American young men that are going to be lost or overlooked, even if they're talented, even if they're doing the right things. They're often overlooked by the mainstream, whether it's economically or in the media. And so we have to be very, very careful to be mindful of these incidences and attack them as is, so that we can optimize all the talent in America, especially at a time where we're struggling economically and socially.
Well, we have to leave it there for now, I'm afraid. That was Lenny McAllister. He's a Republican strategist and host of the McAllister Minute on American Urban Radio Network, with us from NPR member station WESA in Pittsburgh. Jimmy Israel is a writer and adjunct professor of film and social media at Cuyahoga Community College, with us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Arsalan Iftikhar is the founder of TheMuslimGuy.com and senior editor for Islamic Monthly. He was with us from member station WBEZ in Chicago. Mario Loyola is chief counsel at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. He's a columnist for the National Review, but we caught up with him in St. Louis, and he joined us from member station KWMU. Gentlemen, thank you all so much.
Peace. God bless.
Ciao, ciao.
Yep.
And remember, if you can't get enough Barbershop Buzz on the radio, look for our Barbershop podcast in the iTunes store or at NPR.org. That's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin. This is Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Tune in for more talk on Monday.